Okay, I think we're set. And again, this is Eileen Broutman, up all the way from Miami, right? Miami.
That's correct.
And she's an art teacher by profession. And she's going to talk about and, of course, show you. And you can, and after we're done, you can come up and take a closer look. And, of course, she has a table in the folk arts tent here. But she does ketubah, which is a Jewish marriage contracts. And as you can see, they're very... A lot of artistic expression here, highly decorated, and of course, just loaded with symbolism. And this tradition goes way back, and I'll just let Eileen start talking. Maybe you can start with the history of the tradition.
Well, the first ketubah, or contract, between a bride and groom, was written in a book about the same time that the Bible was written. The book is called Tobit, and in it, a man and a woman... actually celebrate a marriage by having a document, a scroll written. And it's written by the bride's father. And it is the first indication that there was ever a documentation of a wedding in the Jewish faith. Over the years, a formula has been created for the ketubah. And that formula provides for the bride. In many traditions throughout the world, a woman hasn't any rights, especially not in a marriage. She can't own anything. Matter of fact, she's considered property. However, in the Jewish faith, from a very early time, the woman was considered a person and could inherit, own property, and have other rights. And so it was formulated that in the ketubah, there would be the bride's price mentioned, things we don't have anymore, the dowry. But then it said that if the groom should die before the bride does, she can regain those properties, that money, and those objects that were hers to start with. And if he divorced her, which, by the way, was very easy to do because all he had to do was walk out on her, and it was a divorce, that she, again, could have those properties that she started with. And so she wouldn't be a pauper and a ward of the state, so to speak. And so the woman's rights were protected. Now, over the years, the wording has changed a bit. We don't necessarily mention a bride's price or a dowry anymore. However, the ketubah is formulated so that the husband promises to treat his wife as is befitting a Jewish husband and according to law, the laws of Moses, the Ten Commandments. And again, if he should die first, she would inherit from him. And if they were divorced, he would provide for her and the children as need be. And so it's a very powerful document. And quite frankly, I never heard the word ketubah until I was married, maybe 20 years. Now, I'm Jewish, and you would think I would know about such things. So I was totally shocked to find out that that little folded paper that's in the vault is not my marriage license. No, that's the one I got from the state. But it's my ketubah. And my husband promised me all these things in it. Very interesting. He's sitting back there saying, yeah, she had to find out, right? It was about the same time that I found out that there was a renaissance of the art form of the decorated ketubah here in America. And so I was finding out things very rapidly. I found out that the tradition was obviously not from the Jewish people of Europe, the Ashkenazi, from whom I'm descended, but from the Sephardic Jews, the Jews who were expelled from Spain in 1492 and spread out over Europe and the Near East and just about every part of the world, bringing their traditions with them. Now, in Spain, the ketubah had a slightly different form than it did in Europe. In Europe, it had been completely formulated by the rabbis, and it protected a woman in the ways I told you, and also from polygamy that was outlawed, and some other things that really made the document powerful. And so all it had to do is be witnessed, and the bride was protected. The situation was covered. But in Spain, it was a little more open-ended. The amount of the dowry could vary, and the amount that could be inherited could vary. And, well, it became important for it to be written up personally for each bride, and each family wanted it to be very beautiful because it was shown as well as read at the wedding ceremony. Matter of fact, so was the dowry. Everything was laid out for the town to see. And so it was a matter of keeping up with the Joneses. Everybody wanted the most beautiful ketubah for their children. It would normally be the groom's family that provided it. And it got more and more elaborate as it went on. Well, it had started in Spain, but then it moved to Holland and Italy and Greece and all over. And who wouldn't like something that's prettier, right? Absolutely. And so it kind of caught on in a lot of places. Here, in about the 1960s, all of a sudden there was this new interest in a decorated ketubah. That's when I saw the very first one in Miami, done by a scribe and ketubah artist. And I said, I could do that. All I have to do is learn how. And so I proceeded in two directions. First, it gave me a purpose, a way to connect with my ancestry. I come from two families that were devout, and anything that I did as a true love from my heart had to be in their honor. And so it honored my aunts, uncles, grandparents, etc. As I said, it wasn't my tradition, so I had to learn it. I knew how to do English calligraphy, so I set out to learn Hebrew calligraphy. And I have to tell you, folks, I still can't read it. It's an embarrassment, but in order to write a ketubah, I take the formula, I send it to the rabbi, and say, write in block letters exactly what I put in each line. And so I can copy it. I can write it rather nicely, I think. And then, of course, I go to the bride and groom and I say, okay, how would you like it to look? Show me. Tell me. What symbolism would you like in it? Do you like a Star of David? Or do you not like to see the Lions of Judah? Or what? How should it look? And I put it all together in my own way. Over the years, of course, I've studied, and there have been wonderful books written. I'll be glad to share some with you on the ketubah throughout history, the ones they found in ancient tombs and the ones that have been throughout the centuries. And they look different in different parts of the world, and we're America. All things go. Everything goes. I can do anything that I would really like to as long as it doesn't conflict with the Judaic tradition. And so I start with a blank piece of paper, and I create a design for the frame. I write the words on it, and then, because it is my other love, I do a paper cut and remove all the parts of the image, all the parts that are not the image, and you can see the circle that's done on the top of this one already. You're all invited to come over later and see it close up. And when it's finished, it's an original piece of art, a commission from the bride and groom or somebody for them, and it's one of a kind. I know there are a lot of things you'd like to know about it. Any questions you want to start with?
Well, maybe you could tell us about both these pieces, about the symbolism and what they say.
Okay, we kind of covered what it says, pretty much. But the symbolism is another story. This one is based on a design from Gibraltar. And traditionally, the ketubahs from there are in an oval form, tied with a bow at the bottom, on which there could be just about anything. In this case, we have the name of the bride and the groom in Hebrew on the bow. And it's topped with a crown because Gibraltar is a British property. Say it that way. The birds are twofold. They represent me. I'm a bird watcher. But also, in most Judaic art, you do not see the human form. And so at the top of this, we have lovebirds representing the couple. The Lions of Judah. If you don't know, in ancient times, Judea and Israel were two separate nations. They became one nation. And Judea is a mountainous area, a desert in actuality, where lions roamed, and the lion was the symbol for Judea. And in synagogues and temples all over the world, you see a pair of lions very often protecting the Ten Commandments. And so those lions are now protecting this couple or this ketubah. They are standing on top of two posts, which represent the posts of the ancient temple in Jerusalem. Believe it or not, they have names. One is called Boaz, and I've forgotten the name of the other one. The flowers on this one are also symbolic. I almost always use the pomegranate flower and the fruit. The fruit of the pomegranate has many seeds in it. In the Jewish tradition, 613 is the number of righteous deeds that you are expected to do, the mitzvot. And so the pomegranate represents the mitzvot, but it also represents fruitfulness. And so it's a wish to the bride and groom to be fruitful in their family. I think I covered, just about everything. There is in this one a star, actually a flag of Israel. There. It says mazel, which is good luck, over on this side. The bride is a writer, and the groom is an attorney, so we have symbols for them. There are grapes here for the wine. What's at the
Maybe
bottom
I
wasn't
there?
Listening.
Did you talk about the three letters?
No, I didn't, but those are the bride and groom's initials. That is Seth and Linda Lubin. This is one of, pardon my saying so, this is a failure, because the reason I have this ketubah is that this couple is no longer married. And I've done well over 15 ketubot over the years. Since 88, I've done about one every year. And there are only two divorces, so I consider it very good. And lots of children.
It's certainly better than the national average.
Yes, I think I'm doing just well.
And how about this piece?
This piece, I started here last year. And technically, I'm supposed to be working on a real ketubah, which would be wonderful, except it's dusty out here, folks, and it would not be suitable to give or to sell in either case. And so I just let my heart lead me, and I've always wanted to do one with imagery from the Near East, from the land of Israel. And so that's what's on this one. There are a series of palm trees representing Jerusalem. The floral design around the bottom, not exactly from the Near East, but simplified versions of the Italian Baroque designs. And the simplification is definitely what we see in the Israeli ketubot. The bride and the groom are lovebirds. It's very obvious. And down at the bottom, there is a Star of David.
Do you consider what I would call the archival aspects of this? I mean, one would expect that the ketubah, you'd want this to last a long time. Can you talk about that?
I personally am very concerned with it because I put a lot of hours into this, and I'd like it to stand it as a piece of art as well as a contract, strong and binding. And so I use the best paper. I use 100% rag watercolor paper, matter of fact, Arches, which is from France. Permanent ink. Traditionally, any contract is written with natural ink, which is like India ink, but that's pretty hard to work on in a calligraphy pen. It's okay in a stick pen. It's okay in a quill, which I'd like to learn how to use. But I have to use a new form of permanent ink so that it'll flow in my calligraphy pen. Oh, I might add that because we write from left to right, the pens that you buy are directed that way. But in order to write the Hebrew, one writes from right to left. And so everything is different, including the pens. I must use a set of left-handed calligraphy pens in order to do it. And they are becoming as rare as hen's teeth, folks, because you can do beautiful calligraphy on the computer.
Are there any interest groups, you know, fellow ketubah artists or things like that? Or do you know other artists that work in this realm in Florida?
Actually, I was very much inspired originally by a gal who works right in the North Miami area. And the names are going to just fly right out of my head right now. And I met another such artists. So I know that there are a few in South Florida. I also know that if you go into a Judaic gift shop, you're going to see mostly Israeli ketubot at this point. So I have to go out there and find a gift shop that would like to carry mine.
I see. Great.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Actually, we don't meet. So I really don't know very many working artists. On the internet, on the other hand.
Yeah. Yeah, there must be. There's a internet site, a news group for everyone.
Absolutely. No, I haven't used parchment. These are the things I am going to do when I grow up and I can be an artist. I tell my students that. I would like to work on parchment. I would like to learn how to use a quill pen. I'll probably have to find another scribe to teach me. And I would like to write a mezuzah, which is the blessing that is put on the doorpost of the house. And it never occurred to me that a woman can do that. A woman can write a ketubah, but a holy document of any kind, a woman traditionally could not write. And a rabbi recently asked me if I've ever written a mezuzah. And I said, no, can I? May I? And he said, sure, why not? So I'm going to be able to try those things. Are you wondering whether it could be cut? Right, and so I probably would have to, egg tempera. Mm. Right. The colors on older documents were egg tempera very often. I use watercolor when I'm forced to use color. Pardon? I haven't. It's not much of an excuse, but I work full time, and if I can do one ketubah in a year, I really am thrilled. And in the past 12 months, I've done three, so I'm very happy. Yes.
You mentioned that the initials of the bridegroom, do they actually sign it, and is there part of the ceremony where they go through that process?
That's a good question, and the answer is yes and no. The bride and groom traditionally did not sign the ketubah. It had to be witnessed. A contract had to be witnessed. It did not have to be signed by either party. In some areas, the groom did sign it. And after all, he's the one who's making all the promises. But nowadays, remember, there are three different generalizations of the Jewish faith, the Orthodox, the conservative, and the Reform. And the Orthodox tried to stick to the traditional methods, and it would just be witnessed. The conservative and the Reform move away from that a little bit, and the last ketubah, which I have a photograph of and I can show you, was not only signed by the bride and the groom and their witnesses and the rabbi, but they decided they didn't have enough people that they loved sign it, so they had some other witnesses. And it's theirs. They can do it. So they just went beyond the absolute necessity.
How about proverbs? Are there any proverbs on these? Aren't they often included?
Very often there is something included. It could be a proverb. It could be very often the there is a part from the proverbs called "The Woman of Valor." It's a poem, and that is very often included. But there are other things. There are blessings. The blessings from the bride and groom. There are seven of them that are said or sung during the wedding ceremony. And they can be included, or any one of them, or any part of them. One beautiful phrase goes something like this. In Jerusalem will be heard the sound of joy and the sound of laughter, the voice of the bride and the voice of the bridegroom. So that's one of the phrases that's very often put on it. And some of them are just well wishes.
This one in particular, are there any on this?
No, there is none on that one. It would normally be in a separate section on the top or in a frame around it, and I can gladly show you that. This one has a place in which it can be fit. That was the plan on this one, and on my sketch you can see that it's there.
I'm curious, there's a Jewish museum in Miami, right? Are there ketubot there?
Yes, funny you should ask that. I work for the Dade County Public Schools as an art teacher, and on Friday, my assignment for the day is to be the museum educator at the Jewish Museum. Did you know that, Bob?
No, I didn't.
I didn't think so. I arrange with other art teachers to bring their students to study what turns out to be not just art, but culture as well in the Jewish Museum. The building, by the way, when you're on South Beach next, is at 3rd at Washington. It's an Art Deco treasure on the Registry of Historic Buildings for the nation, the national one. Mm-hmm. And it has over 80 stained glass windows in it. One of the goals there has been to recognize each rite of passage. And they've been doing, the museum's only 6 years old, and so they've been doing that. Every couple of years, they add another one. The very first one they did was the ketubah. And I had 5 pieces in that one. I had to go beg from some brides and grooms, you know, but I had 5 pieces in that. Is there one in the permanent collection? There's one on display. Mm-hmm. A very traditional, very small one that's in the wedding ceremony that they have set up, the chuppah that they have set up there.
Are there historic ketubot there? You know, the ones that go back that they might have collected or people have donated?
I don't know. I haven't heard of that.
Okay.
And
just
I think they would have brought that to my attention.
Yeah, I haven't been.
The collection that was shown at that exhibit belonged to a gentleman in the Palm Beach area, I believe, and it is an historic worldwide collection, and it was quite wonderful, and there were scholars there to see it, and people who... The one in Arabic caused the most excitement. There were people who were saying that it was a ketubah, and people who came in and said, I can read that, and it's not a ketubah, and there was all sorts of excitement about that.
Any questions from the audience? We're about where we should be time-wise. Mrs. Broutman has a display and a table over here in the Folk Arts tent, and we invite you to come over there and share with her and get a real close look It's probably, we need to get off the stage now. So if you want to take a closer look, she'll be right over there today and tomorrow. And thank you very much.
Come on over, folks.
Eileen Broutman. Thank you.